Basic bananas.
Hey, and welcome back to the show. Today, I have Gregory Deal on the call with me, and I'm super excited to have him here because he is a crazy traveler, and he's also the author of a book called Brand Identity Breakthrough. Welcome to the call, Gregory.
Thank you for having me. Great to be here.
And Gregory, you're calling in today from Bulgaria, I think.
Plovdiv, Bulgaria. Yes, I'm always moving around. Last week it was Istanbul. Before that it was Georgia and Armenia. And soon I'll be in South America, which I consider my home.
Oh, really? That's amazing.
Yes.
Why? Did you move to South America?
I'm always moving. I do own some land in Ecuador, but just culturally and climate-wise, South America is where I feel most at home anywhere in the world.
That's awesome. I love that. And where did you originally grow up?
I grew up in Southern California, San Diego County, where I spent the first 18 years of my life. And then I just started getting on planes every opportunity that I could. And I've been to Bulgaria is country number 47 for me.
That's amazing. Yeah, I'm the same. Every opportunity I get, I jump on a plane. But you also do this professionally, obviously. So the travels that you're doing currently, is that to promote your latest book?
Well, I travel because I have to, is the kind of person I am. But yeah, my second book was specifically more about travel. It's called Travel as Transformation, less about the business end of things. I mean, I talk about some of the business side of traveling too, even working remotely from a laptop in Brand Identity Breakthrough. But the second book is more just about the mentality that a person develops as they become a traveler, how it changes their sense of identity, how their awareness of culture changes, all of which certainly affects the concept of branding too, and how you communicate as a business. So it's all sort of circular.
Yeah, and that's the thing that I wanted to focus on a little bit today in this show, is how your traveling has impacted your views on branding. Can you share a little bit about that? And then we might even go into some concepts from your book, Brand Identity Breakthrough.
Well, one thing you learn being a frequent traveler, and by that I mean not just a tourist, like someone who goes spends a week in a place and says, well, wasn't that interesting when we go in and we went rode that elephant in Thailand. You know, that's a tourist, someone who just does something interesting in a new place. A traveler is someone who actually tries to become an acclimated part of a new culture, a new way of doing things, a new way of interpreting things, new values. And when you do this enough times all around the world, you sort of start to really get a much deeper appreciation of how everyone views the world totally differently, right? It gives you a lot more empathy, right? Because that's what empathy is. It's being able to see things from another person's perspective. And as any salesman or marketer should know, that is vital to the success of any business communication. You have to talk to people where they are. You have to be presenting your product or your service or your brand in a way that is speaking to what they're expecting to hear and to see and what matters to them. Not just buy my product because I think it's the coolest thing ever, but because here's how it will uniquely appeal to you. And the more specifically and the more accurately you can do that, the more successful you're going to be, especially the more niched you are. So I don't know of anything like travel which opens one's capacity to do that better.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more, especially, you know, the empathy. And also for me, traveling over the, you know, the last sort of ever since I was able to travel on my own, since maybe I was 16, has definitely given me a lot of perspective too in life and in business. Now, the thing that you mentioned before is that as to be successful with your brand and your business, you have to be able to talk in your target market's language and to have empathy. What would you tell a business owner? How can they go about that? How can they find out more about what their customers want? And then how can they be empathetic with them? Because you've talked about that a lot in your book. And I think you have some stories too around that. It would be really interesting. And of course, you know, not everyone can go out there and travel and get perspective, but just really any business owner anywhere in the world, how can they do that? How can they be more empathetic and understand their customers more?
I think people are afraid to get personal with things. I think there are different kinds of people. Some people might be what you call like the analytics type of people. They like to look at how many people clicked onto their website or abandoned their shopping cart or converted from this ad. And they like to play with those numbers. And some of that is absolutely necessary. I do the same thing with my books. You know, I've got some pay-per-click ads running and seeing how many people are actually buying the book after they click on it. Is sometimes you need to take that impersonal, more analytical approach. But whenever possible, I think you should do the opposite, which is you should engage in a live conversation with somebody who is in your target market, who has bought your product or is considering buying your product or chose not to buy your product, even though they're qualified to. And you got to let go of that fear of, I guess it's like rejection. It's like the feeling people get when they approach the pretty girl or the hot guy at the bar, whatever your preference, and they're afraid to just go out there and start talking to them. Because even though the worst thing that could happen is they could not want to talk to you, or they could simply not be interested in you, right? And that is the most terrifying feeling in the world for some people. And salesmen and marketers have to deal with that on a recurring basis all the time, which is people might not want to buy whatever it is you're promoting. And that's fine. And you should encourage them to tell you why they don't want to buy it. Or the people who did buy it, who were ecstatic with it, who think it's the greatest thing ever, you'll get some of those no matter what you're selling practically. If it's of any value whatsoever, you're going to get people who think it was fine, and you're going to get people who think it was the cure for cancer, their particular cancer in their life, whatever it is. Talk to those people and say, why the heck do you like this so much? What's so great about it for you? What is it that makes it that nothing else will possibly fulfill the same function in your life except this? Then compare that to the people who aren't interested in it whatsoever and figure out that recurring theme that makes it unique and compelling, that lightning bolt of attention, and capitalize on that. But you don't figure that out until you actually get live human responses from people. I don't think analytics can really tell you that.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, this is something that we often study in the Clever Bunch too, is what are the words that your people are using? So rather than talking how I would normally talk, how do my customers talk so that I can talk how use the words that they would be using? Do you have any example of a business that has applied these questions and then the outcome?
Oh, sure. I used to work for a company called Nomad Capitalist, actually, and it's in a very interesting industry. It's all about internationalization, helping people set up companies offshore, bank accounts, get second residencies and passports, a lot of stuff that many people would consider even controversial or sketchy. Like, there's not a lot of reliable information on this sort of thing, and it's certainly appropriate for the lifestyle I've been living of traveling so much. And when I started working for the individual who ran it, Andrew Henderson, you know, he was trying to figure out, he was selling really high dollar consulting services or concierge services for people who needed these kinds of things implemented in their life. And so my first task would be just getting on Skype calls with a lot of his clients or the readers of his blog or listeners to his radio show who are considering purchasing with him or who already had bought from him. And I would just have to ask them, like, why do you like working with Nomad Capitalist? Why do you purchase from Andrew Henderson? Why, there are other people who provide these services, so why did you choose to go with this one? And over, I saw the same things coming up with, well, he seems more trustworthy, or I read so much of his blog that I feel like he really knows what he's talking about and he's going to guide me in the right direction, right? And so that became an obvious appeal in an industry where there is so much uncertainty. People have very few ways of confirming that this is how you actually structure a company in St. Kitts or Nevis. This is how you actually get a passport in Panama or Colombia or something. Just the trust was the single most important factor for them in that. And because of that, they were willing to pay a lot of money. And he ended up, you know, not being the cheapest provider in that space, but because of that trust factor, which he had no idea of when we started. He just knew he considered himself a really knowledgeable guy, which was obvious from the amount of information he put out, but he didn't even consider the trust part of it.
And then what did he do with that information? So you've done the research, and then, of course, you realize it's all about trust. What's the next step? What did he do with that research?
Well, at least for the time I was working with him, which was for about a year, we were working pretty closely together. We made that the focal point of every time somebody would convert from a reader of his blog to, say, wanting a free consultation or something, there'd be that, you know, pretty common sales funnel now, that someone would go from a free reader to downloading their free report to, do you want a 15-minute or half-hour Skype consultation with someone on the Nomad Capitalist team to assess your problems and see if you're a good fit? And then it became the job of the person handling that call, which was usually myself, sometimes someone else, to establish that trust factor of, okay, you've told me what your problem is. Now let me tell you why that we are the right people who are going to get this done for you. And you can trust that once you give us thousands of dollars, or we take a $2,000 or $5,000 deposit, as the case typically was, you don't have to worry that you're wasting your money, or you're going to get ripped off, or you're not going to get the right thing, or it's not going to get done to fruition. That was the main goal of that first call. And that significantly increased the number of people who converted from free readers to high dollar paying clients. I don't know if he's kept up with that, because it's been about a year now since I've worked with him. And I think his sales model has probably changed a lot, for better or for worse. But at the time, it was very successful.
Awesome. Now, this is really good for our listeners, because at the end of the year and beginning of the new year, this is such a great time to actually say, hey, let's just see how we can understand our customers more and why they love working with us. So some of the questions you mentioned earlier, so we can give them a few more questions maybe to ask when they get on the phone, is why do you love working with us, the company, or what do you love about working with us? What are some other questions they could ask if they do, or when they do those phone calls?
How about why did you, I mean, again, if we're going with a service based like that, it'll be different than, say, if you had a physical product that solved a problem. But, you know, what is the problem my product or my service solves that nothing else available to you does? I mean, everything that exists on the market has some kind of alternative, right? Some other options that could perform a similar function, right? There's more than one food to eat in the world, right? There's more than one way to satiate hunger. And for just about anything I could think of, there's more than one way to solve a problem, even if it's not the same type of product. So you have to figure out why it is that this product specifically is the one that you think is best to solve your specific problem. And that becomes part of your unique selling proposition. And a lot of people think that that's just a function, like something physical about the product, or they think maybe it's like a satisfaction guarantee. You know, the customer is always right, where that's our USP, better customer service. But it could be a combination of something physical about the product. It could be a combination of your personality. Again, that's that trust thing, that I trust this guy more, or identify with this guy more, or he seems more intelligent than the alternatives. He seems less shady. It could be just, you know, not necessarily the problem itself that is solved, but how that solution is created. If people understand how the function is being performed, how they're getting the results they're getting, they're much more likely to be attracted to it, unless they're the kind of person who doesn't want to think about that. They just want it done for you. But if you can detail for people, this is how we produce the solution for you, here's every step of the process, that's a very appealing factor to people, and that can become unique to them because maybe no one else in your industry is disclosing that kind of information.
Yeah, that's awesome. What else? Is there another question that you would suggest that they could ask?
I would ask things like, what would stop you from purchasing this or from working with me? Because even if they end up paying you and becoming your customer, you need to understand what potential objections exist in their mind, right?
Absolutely.
Because eventually someone else is going to have those same objections, whether or not they ever voice them. That's the thing you got to understand, is people don't usually come out and explicitly say these things unless they feel really comfortable with you and you've prompted them and you've given them the safe space to. So somebody who is already comfortable with you enough that they become your customer, get them to be as candid as possible. Say, what might stop you from making this decision or going through with this purchase? Because I promise you there are going to be other people who are thinking the exact same thing who aren't going to explicitly tell you that. So then you have to change your marketing and your sales approach to address those things before they're ever spoken. And suddenly, it might seem like magic, because people who weren't buying from you are suddenly buying from you, even though they haven't specifically told you why that is. Well, it's because the unconscious objections in their mind have now been addressed.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, this is something else that I'm pretty sure you would agree on, is of course you want to talk to more than one person, because sometimes I definitely see businesses that talk to one person and then they give you all this feedback and then you go and action on it and you realize actually that was just one person. You know, it's good to talk to a few people at least and see what are the commonalities, and then just, you know, you don't have to action every single thing that someone tells you, because some of it might not be totally amazing.
You've got to pay attention to your sample size here, like a good scientist.
Yeah, exactly. What's a good sample size, do you think, for anyone who is listening, who is thinking, oh, how many people should I talk to?
That's hard to say because it really depends on what your target market is. In the case of Nomad Capitalist, it was a very specific kind of person who, one, had enough money to be considering these kinds of services, had enough incentive to, you know, most of these things are not easy to do. They require getting on planes sometimes. They require signing a lot of forms, doing a lot of research, preparing a bunch of documents. So it had to be somebody who had enough incentive to go through all that trouble. Like, it'd be saving them a lot of money, or it'd be opening up new travel opportunities for them. So if you've identified that kind of person who has the money, who has the incentive, has the time to get into all this and knows and understands why they're doing all this, that's going to be very different than somebody who just read, oh, wouldn't it be cool if I had a second passport? What's that like? You know, that's not a qualified person. That's the beginnings of the prospecting process, but it's going to go a few steps deeper than that. So that person's opinion isn't necessarily as valuable as somebody who matches all these other criteria.
Absolutely. And it's definitely a good, you know, I always tell our members, talk to your favorite, find out more about your favorite customers, because you want more of those. So I would talk to the people that you think that they are incredible to work with, and then find out what they think and believe, because then you can track more of those people down, or they can track you down actually by doing the right marketing. Now, a little bit more maybe about you, because in your book you talk a lot about how a business can stand out. So one of the points is to be more empathetic, to understand what the customer wants, to address objectives early, etc., objections early. What else could they do to just figure out ways to be more unique, to be more desirable, to be more irresistible, as you say?
I think you need to be memorable more than anything. And small businesses don't have the opportunities that huge businesses do, which is mostly impression-based marketing, right? I've been all over the world, and I always see McDonald's logos everywhere I go. McDonald's is a constant companion in my life, which is not something I can say for most brands with the lifestyle I live. Starbucks is another. I see a lot of Starbucks everywhere I go, so that logo has become very familiar to me. A small business, a niche product, somebody who doesn't have billions of dollars in advertising cannot operate in that same playing field, right? And I think that's a mistake a lot of people make, is they try to emulate huge brands when it's simply not appropriate for what they're doing. Instead, they need to make sure that every impression they have is much more significant in their mind. I'm told constantly, whether it's someone reading my books or someone who's had a consultation with me or worked with me in another way, my personality is sticky in their mind. My voice, whether that's the choice of words I use in writing or the tone I use when speaking. I recently started recording a podcast called Uncomfortable Conversations with Gregory. You would never mistake my tone of voice for anyone else's. You can hear it right now. Like, so you're probably going to remember that if you're the kind of person who's inclined to work with me or listen to anything I've produced, that even if it's just one thing you've read or one thing you've listened to or one time you worked with me, you're going to remember Gregory Deal, right?
And quick question, sorry to interrupt you, but I'm just curious, does that come naturally, that stickiness, that voice that you're using, is that something that is authentic to you, or did you just fabricate that to be memorable?
Oh, it's authentic to me. I mean, I've developed it, but it's also authentic. I've done a lot of voiceover work and narration and things like that, and I've done a lot of writing. So, of course, it develops over time, and you get feedback from people on whether they find it appealing or not. But it's not fabricated. It's not fake. Right? I didn't choose to become someone else. You have to figure out whatever it is that's authentic about you and naturally accentuate those things, make them the forefront of your brand. In my case, it's a personality brand, and you might not want to be the face of your company, but there's got to be something about the elements that make up your company that make people have a reason to remember it. And it could just be that it's so gosh darn valuable, right? It just saves them so much money, or it makes their life so much easier. Fine, that's a way of memorability, but that's not the only way. Another would be something like personality, whether that's it doesn't even have to be something positive. It could be you're the angry, sarcastic guy. Who knows?
It might not help you though to make more sales if you're known as the angry guy.
It depends on your target market. Yeah. A certain group of people are going to like that. They're going to identify with that.
That's true, actually. It depends who you want to work with. That is actually true. Wouldn't be my style of person to work with. But yeah, maybe somebody has that market. Do you have some more maybe case studies or examples of businesses that have become more memorable because of doing something or amplifying something in their business?
Sure. I worked with a woman who was, she was in her 60s when I met her. So she'd already been doing this for about 40 years. She'd been working in things like yoga and Pilates. She was basically, you know, a veteran of this industry, of the ways to work with the body to make it more flexible, more mobile, loosen up the joints, a bunch of stuff I don't understand.
But you should know this stuff. Being a traveler, come on, you should loosen up your joints every time you hop on a plane.
I do move around a lot, but not in the way that she means. her problem was that she was so good at what she did, and she was so familiar with the process because she'd spent her entire life doing it, the point that most people would already be retired from it. She had never talked about it or thought about it from the point of view of a complete outsider to what she did. And she could not really describe what she did in a way other than I work in a sort of motion therapy that's similar to yoga and Pilates. That was the only way she knew how to describe what she did, which made her sound, of course, exactly like every other yoga and Pilates instructor ever. But she was so much different than that. She had a very specific technique she used. She had a very specific goal for the kind of people she worked with and a very specific kind of person that she worked with. But because no one had ever taught her to think like a marketer or a salesman, she never incorporated any of that. She just wanted to perform her craft, right? She just wanted to do the teaching and the retreats and the various ways that she monetized her expertise. And so the two of us working together, she finally understood that it was about, you know, have you ever heard a service advertised in a way of comparing it to another really well-known service? Like, it's like the Airbnb for food.
Yeah, of course. Or I love that.
It's like the Tinder for adopting a cat or something like that.
Yeah, we use that a lot. Yeah,
it doesn't already. And so I taught her sort of to incorporate that approach into what she did, because she had only learned to describe herself as a yoga / Pilates instructor. But instead, she started to say, well, it's like yoga and Pilates, except for people who fit this really specific definition and have this really specific goal, which in her case was athletes who are no longer performing at the peak of their function was one. And then another, she had a retreat specifically for people who are aging and losing mobility in their life. So she started to talk about what she did is it's like yoga for this kind of person who wants this kind of result. And suddenly people would instantly get much more how she did what she did, instead of just saying, I help people have more mobility. I do a type of yoga and Pilates. Like she didn't take it to that next level of specificity, and so that people could instantly understand why they should go to her retreat, even if they didn't have any interest in things like yoga and Pilates.
Yeah, that's a great example, because a lot of people struggle to describe or explain what they do. So using a metaphor is fantastic. I think that's a really good example to share. Thank you so much. Is there any other question that I should have asked you before we wrap up this interview?
Well, three questions I like to ask almost everyone I talk to, much to their dismay, are who are you, what do you do, and why should I care?
So in what sense do you mean? In terms of do you as a business owner knowing those three questions? Or what do you?
Yes, I think those three questions form the basis of another person's impression of your identity. Who are you? What do you do? And then the most importantly, why should I care?
Okay, so just to clarify, you mean for our listeners to have the answers to this question, which basically gives them the pitch. So to be ready,
you
if somebody says,
"Hey," you can ask me those questions if you want. I'll try to answer.
You want me to ask you the questions? Who are you, Gregory?
I am somebody constantly seeking new forms of self-expansion through external experience.
Awesome. And what do you do?
I help people break down their resistance to new information and new action.
And why should I give one? Why should I care?
Why should I care? Oh, you should care because there are new experiences that could help you achieve your own goals better, but only if you learn how to recognize them and assimilate them into your working worldview.
And you know, a fourth question, which is really good too, is why now? Like, why should I care now? Because often we leave things
that's
for tomorrow.
That's taking it a step further. Yeah, why right now? Well, I'd have to know a little bit more about you or whoever's listening to this. But presumably, there's some big opportunity in your life that you are missing out on because you have not learned to think of it in the right way or act on it.
Awesome. And so for our listeners, just so you have a little bit of a call to action. So these four questions, for example, so who are you? What do you do? Why should I care? Why should I care right now? Why right now? They really form part of your pitch of when people ask you about you. These are good things to have in mind when talking to someone. So on that note, let's wrap it up. Thank you so much again, Gregory, for being here. Where can people find you? What's the best? Where should we send them?
You can go to my website, gregorydiehl.net. Deal is spelled D-I-E-H-L, or just check out one of my books on Amazon, Brand Identity Breakthrough and Travel as Transformation, or listen to my podcast, Uncomfortable Conversations with Gregory.
Great. We'll post some links in the show notes too, so people can find you there too. Thanks so much. Thanks again, Gregory. Have fun in Bulgaria.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Basic bananas.